Hello and welcome to another episode of the Healthy Church Growth Show podcast. And this is episode 42. And if you've been listening through the month since we started, April, so we'll have an anniversary in April, something special is coming up for that. If you've been listening since then, you will know that we have brought up different challenges, different experiences from leaders, not only in the UK here, but in Australia and the USA. And today I am so delighted because I have joining me Pastor Kent James. He is in Florida, which is Jacksonville, Florida. Pastor Kent, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Wonderful. How about you?
I'm so delighted to have you talk to me because we're going to be looking at crisis in leadership, and there's a specific thing that happened to you. And this is almost a year or a year's anniversary since it happened. So we're going to be looking at leadership in crisis, and how do you plan for crisis? Did you plan for crisis? So I'm going to be asking you some questions around that. But first of all, you're a bivocational church leader. So you not only lead a church, which is Restoration Church in Jacksonville, but you also work as a professional in organizational development by developing other leaders in the corporate space, because I worked in HR and then organizational development. So how do you reconcile the two? You know, you've got your corporate space, you've got your church space. How do you deal with that?
That's a great question. I believe it has a lot to do with what type of work you do as a vocation. Mine just seems to fit. It is basically the same thing. It's working with people. It's developing people. It's giving people the resources they need to develop in their own personal and professional journeys. And so the work that I do by day is what I like to call it, is develop leaders. So they come to me and say, hey, I need to develop an emotional intelligence. I need to strengthen the scope of the work that I do. I want to be an influential person. How do I do that? And so I gather all the resources they need and become a coach, mentor, provide professional formal training for them. And so I take a lot of what I do during the day, and then I apply it to the work that I do as a pastor as well. So it's still developing people. It's giving people the resources they need, add in some spiritual components to that, you know, as a basis, but they both work together. And so as I'm working at the church, I think, this might be a good idea to do at work with those leaders because they might benefit from it. And as I'm working at work, I'm thinking, I can use this same program to develop the leaders at the church. So the two of them mesh together really, really well. Fantastic. See, the thing that I have to be cognizant of is the time that it takes to do both. So not allowing them to run over into each other, but I try to compartmentalize. This is time that I'm working on church activities. This is time that I'm working on work activities. So as long as you have a good handle on that, I think you can be successful in doing that.
So you're talking about time management and making sure, you know, that you put one box away and then take the other one out. I mean, how does that look for you? How do you do that in a practical way?
So it can be challenging at times. And by the way, I'm in school obtaining my master's degree as well.
There You're are doing other a things master's that are, at the moment.
Master's, yes, that's right. I have.
When did you start that?
I'm about four classes away. So I started in 2018. And about four classes. So I'll be done October 1 of this year. With that.
What will you major in?
The major is human resources administration. And then so following that, I'll do a master's certification in pastoral counseling and maybe psychology. So we'll see. I'm a glutton for punishment.
or you're hungry for knowledge.
That's right. That's right. I like yours better.
Yeah. We need to show ourselves approved. So that's exactly
what
we're doing.
Amen.
And that's inspirational for others that work around you if they see you doing it. But mm-hmm. I said, wow, because obviously, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, you went through something last March. Mm-hmm. So that's even more mind-boggling to me. So can you tell me how you became a church leader in the first place? Your lead pastor, as I said, of Restoration Church in Jacksonville, Florida.
Sure. So this journey goes back many, many years. I am the 11th child of 12 children. And my father was and is a bishop in the church. And so all of us had to have some type of commitment in the church. So either you were a singer, or you were administrative, or you were a speaker, you had to do something. You had to be a part of some type of church, and usually more than one capacity, right? So I started off as just in the youth department being active. And then I started being on the praise team, so leading worship, and then more administrative things. So kind of the behind the scenes, they saw that I was really good at organizing things and, you know, marketing, things like that. And so that's kind of where they put me, but I was operating in all capacities. So worship leader, speaker, and this was me as a young kid, about 13 years old. So I was marketing when it wasn't popular to market, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just kind of, you know, that hunger that was in me to kind of, to act in that way. And so when I was about 17 years old, our current youth leader we had at the time turned it over to me pretty much and said, here, you take it. You've learned enough. You go and teach Sunday school, lead the youth efforts because you have a good, your hand is on the pulse of what the youth need. And so I reluctantly move into the leadership capacity as the youth leader. And then from there, it was youth leader to youth minister. So I gave my first sermon in 1997 as a youth minister. And so from there, the role just grew. And, I, you know, wherever the need was, I just kind of filled in. So mainly on the administrative side, mainly on the executive team, I'm doing the behind the scenes work. Then also as a youth leader, youth pastor. And then from there, many, many years after, the Lord had, you know, put in me to become a pastor decades earlier, and I knew it. And the confirmation would come through various leaders, both who I knew, and then leaders who would come to the church just to visit, to speak, would say to me, you're going to be a pastor one day, we know it. And then my pastor knew it and would confirm it, but it was still, you know, it wasn't an overnight thing to where I said, hey, they told me I'm a pastor. Let me go and get my Bible and let me open my church. It was decades later. You know, I just did the work. I stayed faithful to what I was doing, where I was, and let God prune me and prepare me and learning all I could. I love learning. And so I wanted to learn from the leaders who I was under. And so when the time was right, about 5 years ago, I branched out with the blessing of my pastors to say, they all said, this is the time, this is good, go and do it, we want to support you. And so I had all of that behind me. And so I branched out on my own to create the church that the Lord had birthed in me, a unique ministry that was not like any other. And so I think that was where I was able to be comfortable doing it because I knew it would be unique. So that's kind of how it all started.
So what do you mean by unique? What are the unique features of?
Yeah, so our church is really, really strong in community efforts. And so we even have a Sunday that's dedicated. We do things throughout the month as far as outreach and community efforts, community service. We partner with a lot of community services here in Jacksonville. We're helping one charity launch on March 27th. So they're using us kind of as a support system. But then we have a Sunday that's set aside to where we close the doors of the church and we go on the outside and we open up and we make it a fun activity for the neighborhood. We have the grills outside. We're grilling hot dogs and burgers and giving away clothes and toiletries and
wonderful,
just loving on people, just going, and that's really where my heart is. Mm-hmm. And I always say that is who we are. That's who we'll always be, is that church that's out with the people, getting to know them, sharing the love of Christ. And so starting out, I had a lot of good, well-meaning pastors tell me that's not going to fly.
Why did they say that?
And again, they were well-meaning to say that you need to pattern your church after what is traditional. So you have to have so many services per day. You have to have this program. You can't close your door on a Sunday. You can't, you're going to lose your people. You can't do this. You can't do that. And so the Lord birthed in me to stay unique to who I am, because it is He who created me and it is He who gave me the passion to do what I'm doing. And so as long as it lines up with the word of God and it lines up with what He's calling us to do, He tells us to show love. He tells us to go out and compel people to come. He tells us, you know, when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison, you visited me.
Yeah.
And so doing that work, you know, and then staying faithful and staying unique to who we are is how we've gotten. So it's how we've gotten where we are now. So I'm really, really thankful for that.
I kind of relate to some of the things you're saying because of the type of ministry that I run. But can you tell me, when you heard that, what was it specifically that made you think, no, I need to focus on what God, because sometimes it's very difficult, isn't it? You're surrounded by people that you look up to, or their elders, or they feel they know more than you. It's outside the box. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we've done. We're not used to this. Was that right. Fear? Did you feel that it came from a place of fear? Or, as you said, generously, well-meaning, Sanballat and Tobiah?
Right. So I'll say it was, again, it was, I think people, when something comes along that they're not used to. So let's take the automobile. So that was kind of something people weren't used to. They were used to the horse and buggy. And now here comes this scary thing, this automobile. What is this? The television, or the television isn't going to last because we're used to radio. So anytime that you come with something that's different than what people are used to, they're going to have objections to it. Mm. They're going to have concerns with it. Mm. And so, of course, the people who knew me, the leaders who knew me, wouldn't have said and didn't say that to me. But it was people who don't know me, who said, you know, that's not going to work. We've seen that happen before. The leaders who knew me kind of said, we're going to get behind you. We know who you are. We know that, you know, that's where you call it to go. So I have to say that it did affect me, but not much, very minimally, because I was strong in, I was just very stubborn about being true to who I am. Mm. Yeah, that's right.
The Nehemiah spirit.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's wonderful. So come March 2020, on the 23rd of March in this country, we're in the UK, we heard about this strange disease. We'd heard about it the week before, but all of a sudden, everything was locked in. Not say locked down, but it was locked in. Basically, we faced an uncertain future. And right. At the same time, you in America were facing the same thing because it was global, but you had a challenge, which I thank God I'm even looking at you and speaking to you now. Mm-hmm. Tell me what happened.
So last year, there was a young couple in my ministry. And they were about to get married and we were having a wedding rehearsal. And I was waiting for my wife to come home. She had gone off and we were going to go to this wedding rehearsal. I was drinking some hot tea. I sipped the hot tea and immediately I regurgitated. And it was just the strangest thing. So I thought it was something to do with the tea. I took another sip and I regurgitated again. I went outside to wait for her to pick me up. And before I knew it, I was on the ground, bowled over in pain. And it just came out of nowhere. And my wife came home, me being who I am, I insisted upon going to the wedding rehearsal. So she and I had a small little argument because she wanted to take me to the emergency room. I said, no, I'll go after. I want to go to this wedding rehearsal. Well, I got to the wedding rehearsal and barely could stand for 5 minutes. So the entire church, it took all of them against me to convince me to go to the hospital. And so I went ahead and went. Within hours, they were doing surgery on me. So it was, I would say I went to the hospital around 8 p.m. Early the next morning, I was being prepped for surgery. So that's how bad it was. So my gallbladder had gone bad and I had like all these infections and all everything as a result of it. I had that surgery. Shortly after that, you know, so I gave God thanks. I made it through. You know, the doctors were saying it's a good thing you got here when you did. I was healing up. They sent me home. I was right back in the hospital the next day. They found blood clots in my portal vein near my liver. They started treating that. They sent me back home again. I was back in the hospital the next day. And so it was me taking ambulance rides in the emergency vehicles over and over again. So every time they would send me home, there was something else that they'd find. Then they found a blockage in my intestines, and part of my intestines were mangled and blocked off. And so they had to go back in again and do surgery to remove part of my intestines, kind of merge them together again. And it was a very, very slow process of healing. They finally sent me home. My faith levels, I would like to say I was at an all-time high the whole time, but that's not true. You know, I really, my faith was tested. My faith was tested as never before. You know, I never had anything done at the doctor's other than yearly annual visits. I'd always been healthy. And so for this, I was in the hospital from March through July, off and on. And just dealing with all those health challenges, wondering, am I going to make it out? You know, one day when I was at my lowest point, I asked the nurse to bring me a living will document so that I can make preparations, because that's how low I was feeling.
Wow.
That's how bad. And then too, you mentioned COVID, my wife wasn't allowed to come see me. I couldn't have any visitors because the hospitals were on lockdown. And so I went through that whole ordeal, I stayed by myself, without any human interaction of people I knew. I knew that God was with me. But God, yeah, that comforted me to know that he was there with me. But, you know, my wife couldn't come see me. The most she could do was call on the phone and talk to me. So that is what took place. And then even in July, when I finally was on my way to health, I had many days where I had a home health nurse come and see me. I had a series of nurses and I couldn't eat. I lost over 100 pounds.
You look like a completely different man to me. Because remember, we met in, when was I in Florida?
2019, maybe?
Or was it 2018? Oh, honestly, it feels like a long time ago.
I know that it was at, because you came to my church's anniversary. So 2018, it must have been.
Yeah, October.
October. And so even when I was at home, I still was on bed rest. I couldn't get up. I couldn't do anything for myself. I had about two or three nurses come in during the week to administer drugs, to administer food. I was eating through a tube that hang next to my bed. I had a physical therapist come in several times a week to help me learn how to stand, to sit, to walk to the restroom, to close my eyes and stand up, just things you just can't imagine that you would have to be taught again, because I would fall. I would try to walk and I would just fall. And so I went through that whole ordeal of learning how to do all those things again. Sitting outside for 5 minutes was one of the things on our to-do list. You know, he would say, on the next visit, we're going to sit outside for 5 minutes. And I thought that was the worst thing in the world. Like, how am I going to do that?
Wow.
How am I going to sit up in this chair for 5 minutes? And so I had so much fret and anxiety. Or he'd say, we're going to walk to the mailbox on our next visit. And I would panic. How am I going to do this? How am I going to use my walker? Because I was using a walker device to walk with. how am I going to do this? I didn't eat, period. I could drink a little, but that's all I could do. And so I was in an unfamiliar place. I'm the one that's usually doing things for people, you know? To have all these people waiting on me, to have my son and my wife waiting on me hand and foot was unfamiliar territory to me.
I mean, this is just such a massive testimony. Talking about that, so in March this happened and the congregation knew about it and you went in, and there's a couple of things you said about you losing faith. What about them? Because I know congregations that have lost their leader, actually. Mm-hmm. The leader has gone home to the Lord, and mm-hmm. during the time they were serving, and a lot of them actually lost their faith. Mm-hmm. So that's number one we need to look at. Number two, what was the leadership structure? Were they able to just pick up? So two things there.
Great questions. Yeah, great questions. So I attribute a lot of the success to my wife, who was there. And I can't say that it didn't wear on her. There were days when she and I talked where she broke down and cried for various reasons, for obvious reasons. But I attribute a lot of the success of the church to my wife. I'm very strong in leadership, I like to think. I'm very strong in empowering people, planning. Yeah. Yeah. We have a church contingency plan, but what I found out is that contingency plan worked well in theory, but it wasn't practical. Why? The contingency plan said things like, in the case of an emergency, here is what should be done, but it was very generalized. There was nothing that said, if the pastor is incapacitated, this leader needs to hold services, or this team needs to react and do that. So it was very generalized. And again, in theory, it was a great, great plan. Mm. I was proud of it up until last year when I had to use it. Then I said, well, there's a lot of work that we need to do with this contingency plan.
And have you revisited that?
We're actively revisiting portions of it at a time. I'm taking my time and doing it, because the first time I did it so that it could be done. Now I want to be more strategic with,
of course,
the parts of it that need to be covered. So we are looking at it on a piece-by-piece basis. So my wife was very instrumental in relaying information. You know, some of them would call, but some of them were very cautious about calling me because they didn't want to overdo it. And so my wife was kind of that mediator to you know, sharing the news about how I was doing.
What about them and their faith during this time? If this has happened to the man of God, I can hear it now. What about us? You know, because that's what happens in some circles. Did that happen?
You know, if it did, they didn't let on. So I tried to stay in contact with them as much as I could. You know, sometimes it would take me days to get back to them, of course. But I'm sure there was some
shaking
of faith. There had to be. There had to be, because it would be with me. You look into this leader who is pretty much the mouthpiece of God. And if he is going through this way and he just can't get back, because I tried and tried to get back and I just couldn't get back. And so I'm sure there was some wavering in faith. But the leaders showed me how strong they are. And I was very proud, and I still am very, very proud of them. And you asked, were they able to pick up? The answer is yes. They picked up in their own way. I think as leaders, we have to give people the onus to be able to lead in their own way.
Yes, yes, I agree.
They're going to do it. They're going to do the work, but it might not look like you would do it. Of course, it's not going to be done the way that you would do it, but give people the onus, give them that freedom to lead how they lead.
Because their DNA is different from yours.
Different than yours.
But do you find a lot of leaders struggle with that? Because I, as you know, I work with a lot of leaders. I've just done a major piece of work. Sometimes, you know, the leader says, and everybody follows, if it's done slightly differently, in some cases, it can cause conflict. Has that been your experience?
I've seen that happen both in the my secular job and spiritual. So, I, you know, with my work in corporate America, I tell leaders, you know, when your people send documents to you to proofread, you don't always need to have your red pen out. Sometimes the document is pretty good. There might be things you would add, but you don't have to say that every time.
No.
Sometimes just say it's good to go. It's a good piece of work. Mm-hmm. You know, now if there's a glaring mistake or if there are some things that you definitely need to change, of course, change those. But as leaders, we have to let people feel that they know what they're doing or that they're progressing.
Yeah.
So that's part of it is I had to allow people to lead. You know, there were, we have prayer calls. There were a few of those calls I was on and I say, you know, I would have said that differently. I would have started with a scripture instead. But guess what? That's the way that I would do it. So, you know, in a place to where you allow people to lead how they lead, do it their own way, because there's a blessing in it, because then they're putting their own identity into it, which means that they are committed and they're invested in it. So allowing people to lead how they lead is very important. And I think that was the key that helped our church move on. I like to say we didn't just survive, we thrived. We brought on new members while I was sick.
I noticed.
So to some pastors that might be kind of off-putting, like, well, we're gaining members and I'm not even there. What does that say about me? It says great things about you.
It's nothing. It actually is a very good reflection of you as a leader. If people are leading in your absence and doing it effectively, then that has got to be something that you can be proud of, surely.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I feel the same way. I feel the same way. So, yeah, the leaders, they took on, they carried out service. We still were doing outreach. Now, we were in the midst of a pandemic, so they were creative with how they did it. They went online with the outreach, you know, they were purchasing items to send to people, whoever was in need, as opposed to us doing it face-to-face like we used to. They had all that against them. They had the pandemic. They had me not being there. Our church, we were moving. We had some issues with where we were located. So we had that. We were having to move to a new location. Anything, minister, that you could think of that was against the church was going on at that time. So
are you a 501c? I think we don't have that over here. We just have things called charities or charitable organization. It's the same thing.
501c3. We're in the midst of
501c. Sorry.
Right. We're in the midst of getting that. That's like a lot of paper, a lot of work, and a lot of.
Yeah.
So we're in the midst of going through that process.
It's just that you were mentioning community work, and it seems to me, I've noticed here, the UK government are crying out for faith organizations, for example, to engage with, you know, the fallout of this pandemic, because mental health is a massive thing, loneliness, etc. And they really want organizations to come in, whether they're a church or whether they're a ministry, because I think there's a slight difference, but the two organizations to go in there and help them out without having a bias on faith or religion, etc. So that's the reason I asked. But I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, because you are on top of all this. I don't know where this inspiration came from, but in May, you have got a special event, and I'm honored to be part of this. Tell me about that.
Sure. So as part of my genetic makeup, I love inspiring leaders. I love identifying leaders and pivoting the next generation of leaders to the forefront. And so we actually had our first session last Tuesday night. So it is a 10-session leadership program, leadership development program for people both in secular leadership as well as church ministry, heavy emphasis on church ministry leadership. And so we've had leaders come from all areas to say, hey, I want to develop as a leader. And so we have those sessions set up to where we work with the leaders. We are pairing them with mentors in the community. We're, you know, broaching subjects like what does it take to be a leader? What are the characteristics of being a leader? How can you influence change? How can you be an inspirational leader? So all of those topics we've been talking about those, and that's going to run through July.
Yeah.
And so, as you mentioned, we do have you as one of our guest speakers that we're really excited about.
Thank you.
along with a couple of other really, really good friends of mine who are also going to come in, and because I don't know it all, right? So, you know, I'm good with kind of plotting out who I think would be good to fill the spaces where I'm not as strong. And so you definitely would play a pivotal role in developing those leaders. So really, really excited.
Different voices as well. And it's not even about male, female, it's about different voice. I've got very different approach. My life experience is maybe longer than others. I've had experience in the corporate realm, but obviously I'm having experiences in the Christian leadership realm as well. So I think the four speakers that you've chosen are perfect compliment. Can people actually enroll on this, or is it too late?
It's too late for this session. We plan on doing another, because we had some people ask after we got started. And I just don't want anybody to be kind of trying to catch up with what we're already doing.
Yeah.
So we will have another cohort probably in the fall, I'm thinking.
Sure.
In fall or autumn. So we'll, you know, we'll do that.
Nice. So if you had to give one piece of advice to a leader in the church or a church leader. I always make that differentiation, because we always think of leaders in the church as being the lead pastor. No, it doesn't work like that. It's all leaders. So what one piece of advice would you give them to address and perhaps meet crisis?
Great question. And so I actually think the name of that course that you just mentioned that we're going through is called LEAD. It's the acronym. So it's for a LEAD. L is for learn. E is for engage, A is for accelerate, and D is for deliver.
Yeah.
It starts with learning. So learning about who you are as a person, learning about your organization, even learning about the city in which you're located, because I heard a great leader tell me one time, you can't lead in a place where you're not familiar with. You have to know the history. You have to know the makeup of the people, because you need to know what need you need to meet. And so learning all you can, growing, and then that vocational learning all you can, so that you can be in a place to where when crisis does come, because it's going to come, Jesus even told his disciples, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, because I've overcome the world. So he tells us ahead of time that, hey, there is going to be issues. There are going to be problems. You can't have your head buried in the sand like an ostrich, as if nothing's going to happen. Things are going to happen. So having that leadership mindset, that learning mindset, being prepared. So part of leading, again, is learning about what you need in that crisis. What is that going to look like? And then engaging those who are around you, engaging those resources, engaging your congregants to see who can step up in that instance. And then being prepared to do so. So making that plan, not like the one I had, the theoretical plan to where, you know, but one that's really working. And you know, the way that you do that is by having conversations, is opening up to the people in your leadership, in your congregation, you know, letting them have buy-in, letting them, you know, support what it is that you're trying to accomplish, and then work on that as a team instead of in a vacuum or a silo by yourself. But kind of get all the key players and the key stakeholders in a room and just say, absolutely, what would it look like if a crisis took place? What would we need? What resources would we need? How would we continue? How would we journey on? You'll be amazed at the responses and the content that you develop from those people. So I would say that's step one, is having those conversations and learning what you need.
And that's so important. If I'm working with a church, what I tend to do is to send out a survey, normally anonymously, to all the delegates, whether they're groups of leaders or volunteers, et cetera. And one of them came back with something really interesting that said, you know, it's not only the pastoral leaders that have the answer. In fact, the people that are working on the ground know more about what's happening than the pastoral leaders. So their opinions or their knowledge shouldn't necessarily be pushed aside. It should be integrated. Not all the time, it may not be appropriate, but certainly we need all voices as much as we can.
I agree. You need those data points. As you said, you might not integrate every idea that you hear, but you think about it, a leader is at a vantage point of kind of looking at it from a holistic view. Right? So their vantage point is different. The people who do the work every day are in the trenches and they know the pieces, the cogs and the knobs that go along that make it work. Mm-hmm. And so you do want to have those data points from all levels. And as you said, you might not implement everything that they say, but sometimes you have that, that is a good point. I didn't think of that, or I didn't see that we would need that particular thing. So it's very valuable.
Absolutely. I know you've written 4 books, and what we're going to do is to include the links in the show notes when it's out. This podcast goes out on iTunes, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and a range of other platforms. So the link will be there, not only to your church, but if people want to inquire for the next program that you've got for leaders, the book. But I know you've got 1 copy of one of the books. So
this one is Upgraded by Grace, Your Abundant Life, The Way God Intended. So this was written about 4 years ago. And it was based on the knowing and learning about God's grace and his power to sustain you even in your weakness, and how it catapults you into his light, into who he wants you to be. So that was kind of the basis of this, and dealing with brokenness, because you know, you'll have to have me back for another podcast to talk about my history in brokenness as a young boy and a lot of things I went through that I'm just now able to talk about at age, I'll be 47 this week. Wow. So
Oh, you're March born as well.
March 10th. March 10th is my birthday. So
no, no wonder we get on so well. I was born on March the 12th. So mine is on Friday, March the 12th.
Friday. That's right.
Take note, everybody. No, I'm joking.
That's right.
I will be celebrating 62 years. And, so that's fine.
Happy birthday.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I never thought about it. So it makes sense now. It makes sense. Yeah. So a lot of things I went through and the shame of it, the shame of it, the guilt of it, because you take on the shame, you take on the guilt.
Yeah.
And then you deal with, you try to cope with it, but you don't really cope with it. You just kind of compartmentalize. And it affects so many areas of your life. It holds you back a lot.
Of course.
It you know, there's kind of what they call that brain trauma that you deal with from it. So that was the basis of this book. When I kind of felt free, and I'll be honest and upfront, I still wasn't totally free when I wrote this book. I thought I was. But so there are some things in here that I've come even further since writing this book. And I'm trying to find the date on it. But I'm going to say 2016 or 17 is when I wrote this book.
So you got another book in you.
I do. I have another book in me that's going to, and I'll tell you, it's taking everything in me to write that book. I know I have to write it.
Yeah. And after this 2020 /21 experience, I think that, you know, the testimony, and you've been so authentic today. I really appreciate you, because, you know, admitting that you could not cope with it, or that you found it, you really struggled, I think that will help other people, because I know when I was growing up back in the day, you were not allowed or told that you cannot air your dirty linen in public, and so you have to keep quiet. And that's affected me almost all my life. So I think it's really important that we hear those messages, you know, and get them. So the link to the book will be on the show podcast. I really, really appreciate your time and sharing this, because I know this is going to help other leaders. But Pastor Kent, I really want to say thank you so much for your time, your authenticity, and your friendship as well. And I can't wait to see you in May when I do my session.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're chomping at the bits, as we say in America. We're waiting on you. So yeah, we're really excited about it.
Bless you. God bless you, and thank you so much.